Devil never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that mighty sea is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, mighty sea will join the fight. On the sea or on the land, he gets the situation well in hand.
So though we are in danger, we never despair, 'cause we know that where there's danger, he is there.
He is there, on the land, on the sea, in the air.
Alrighty, folks, this is Dan Kirkendall, and we're going to have another Mighty Seek podcast. Now, sheesh, that's a great start. Today I'm going to kind of go a little loose. I've been thinking about an issue that I'm not entirely sure how to explain. I was actually hoping last night to actually have a guest host. Joseph Engo was going to join me and we were going to talk about this, but I could not figure out how to record with Skype. So I'm sure my, maybe one of my five listeners will, give me some tips and pointers on how to accomplish that on Windows in some easy fashion. I saw there was a description somewhere about creating a separate user account on the machine, and then switching users, I guess, is basically what they were wanting to do. I don't know, it looked like a mess to me, so I haven't done it, and I'm not sure I'd be interested in hassling with that. Now, in the last couple weeks since the last podcast, there's been a whole bunch of PodPress development going on. PodPress is the plugin that I have been writing to make podcasting easier from WordPress. I'm now on, oh shoot, what version am I on here? Version 3.8 is what I'm at now. It's gotten pretty cool. I've got a bunch of online, you know, embedded video player support. It's got support for all kinds of podcasting, audio, video, ebook, it'll do it all. It's pretty cool. I'm extremely happy with how it's turned out. It's taken a fair amount of work, but it's been worth it. The Mighty Seek podcast is now also featured on the Havildar security email that goes out every week. Havildar, for those that don't know of them, is a basically the largest provider of security RSS feeds. As far as I know, nobody even comes close to matching the number of RSS feeds they provide or the number of subscribers that they have. I mean, they're cranking it out there. They're doing a fantastic job. And the most recent week has a big old Mighty Seek podcast image and link on there, and they're going to be referencing the podcast as well, so I'm excited about that. Excited about the relationship with Havildar. They've got some really cool stuff. They've got this unified security portal that they're working on, and it's amazing. It's an amazing way to centralize all of the security issues on network. Now, that kind of ties into the topic today, because I know this podcast is kind of a niche podcast in that I'm very focused on application security. And I think it may be a little difficult to understand why application security is different than network security. Why am I differentiating myself from all of the standard security podcasts out there? And there's number of them. There's a lot of development podcasts out there. The Polymorphic podcast is great. You know, I'm subscribed to a number of of podcasts and development podcasts. There's a really good PHP podcast, which PHP Pro, or yeah, the PHP Pro podcast. And that's a lot of interviews generally, but it's great. You know, you get to hear about developers and their thinking, and that's great. Havildar, they also have a podcast. It's a weekly radio podcast, or I'm sorry, a weekly like news podcast that just does it is a very quick run through of security issues, and it's all types of security issues. It's not strictly application security. So, and that's great. And actually, the podcaster, the guy that does the reading on that, is Jay Johnson, who's a member of my company, NT Objectives, the company I am the director of engineering for, and the company I don't talk about all that often. But I'll be next week. I'm going to actually be out in Texas doing a security audit for the Navy. And I'm going to be actually that podcast should have Joanne go on there, and we're going to be talking about a number of issues with actually doing a physical security audit, actually, or not physical security, but doing a security audit. And we're going to talk about how that actually works and what we actually try to accomplish there. So you know, that's going to be fun. We're going to be all out there doing this security audit, so we're going to put together a podcast. Anyway, in that one I'll have plenty of shameless plugs for the NTO Spider product that NT Objectives is developing, that I manage the development process for. So we'll be doing tons of shameless plugs on that, as if this isn't enough of a shameless plug, but it's a very cool tool, and we're going to go into how you would use it in a security audit, because it is a critical tool around a security audit. Anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later. I was talking about other podcasts. There's also Security Now, which is a really good podcast. I enjoy. I know that the security expert on Security Now, Steve Gibson, is sometimes a bit of a controversial fellow. But overall, it's a good podcast, and they do a really good job at informing people. Even when they're not 100% accurate, they are very good at going back and correcting themselves. And they are the ones that turned me on to Hamachi, which is a VPN solution. And for that, I can't thank them enough. It's a fantastic tool. Total sidebar there, but it's a great tool. All right, so let's see real quick. Any other things? I'm putting together a forum that may be up in the next few days, probably sometime over the weekend, that is going to be strictly focused on web application security. I have not been able to find any forums online that are focused on giving it, you know, some kind of forum, some kind of way for people to discuss web application security issues. So the MightySeek.com site will have a forum on there that will allow this kind of discussion. All the discussion that I've seen so far is on BugTrack, on various mailing lists, and news feeds. You know, and that's news readers and news feeds and all that are great. I'm not talking about RSS. I'm talking about NNTP. That's the old style news, you know. It's great. The old threaded online structure is fantastic. But, you know, these days everything's web-based. And, you know, I know Google will archive them, but it's really just, I don't know. I feel like an online forum would be useful, so I'm putting it out there. And on that forum, they'll be able to talk about PodPress. Another plug for my plugin. But, all right, let me get down to the primary discussion for today is about what makes web application security different than standard network security. In standard network security, there's a finite number of issues, I guess, is the best way to look at it. There's kind of a limit, basically. It always continues to get larger, the lists get bigger, but overall, it's a containable problem. So let me explain that a little bit. Let me do a quick bit more setup. I started out as a I started out programming, but then I quickly became a network administrator for a number of years. And while at a company called Fortis, they're a huge financial company, I think they're one of the top, or one of the Fortune 50 companies, they're enormous. But while I was there, I was working on their budding security team that was coming into being, and I was handling the West Coast side of things. Most of the company was, I think, centralized out of Georgia, if I remember correctly, or at least the United States branch of the company. The largest part of the company is a European company. But in the United States, their central location was Georgia, and then we had some offices out in Orange County, California, where I was. And I was managing security over there, and I was involved in all of their network infrastructure and all of the bounces back on groupware systems and network operating systems, going from Windows to Novell and back to Windows, and then having a mix of the two, and it was wild. And at that time, I got involved in the security issues and started really digging into that, took a number of classes, and really started, that became my focus. I've always kind of been interested in security, but at that point, it gave me an opportunity to have all of the environments. It was a very mixed network, and that's really important when you're trying to learn security issues, because when you're dealing with mixed environments, you really start thinking about how things work rather than specific issues around a specific platform. You really think about how networks function and how users interact with things, how services work. And so my thinking was able to mature there, and that was a great experience. Then I moved on and took a job with a company called Foundstone, which was really the premier network security company. They had a fantastic consulting division. The company was doing great. I came in as part of their application development. They were building a tool called FoundScan, which was really the tops in terms of network vulnerability scanners. And I was, it was a really cool job. I was really excited about it. And we did some great work there. Their scanner was amazing. I was involved with the web interface to it, giving users the ability to manage everything through the web. Of course, that had to be very tightly secured. But I then at Foundstone, I spent more time and more energy understanding network security. And then I ended up deciding to part ways with them and help start a company called NT Objectives. And NT Objectives, our goal was really around web application security, which I felt was much more interesting. So let me explain that as I get into that issue. So let me start off with network security, since we're just still discussing Foundstone, my time at Foundstone. Network security. The reason that it's got a finite space of issues to deal with is because there are only so many versions of various operating systems. There's a certain number of services out there, ports, all that kind of stuff. So in network VA, network vulnerability assessment, in network security, however you want to think of it, you'll generally run a scan where you'll try to figure out what computers are on a network. So you'll scan, let's say, an IP range. And you'll go through it and you'll find all of the machines that are on it and are on and are, you know, accepting calls. And you do this a number of ways. One of them, you'll use ICMP, which ping, I guess, is the easier way to refer to it. You'll ping all the machines. You may also do some initial port scanning, and you'll scan a couple TCP ports and some UDP ports and see if they just get dropped or if they get rejected. If they get rejected, then you know there's a machine there that is got a firewall that's rejecting. Most firewalls will drop, and so often that's not helpful, but there may be some common services that are on. So it could be blocking pings, but have the Windows file sharing service running. So then you'll discover that the machine's alive. So anyway, when you're doing network security, you're network scanning, and you're trying to find the machines on the network. Once you find the machines that are live on the network, and you're able to connect to them in some way over the network, then you try to identify the platform. You know, is it a Windows machine, a Unix machine, Linux, BSD? You start doing a number of things to try to figure out what operating system, what platform we're dealing with. There's a number of ways you do that. Sometimes you send, you know, funky packets where it'll be a ping in a certain way, and you know that Windows is going to respond this way. Linux will respond this way when it sees a packet that's invalid in this format. So there's a number of things you can do. A lot of it around funky packets that you're sending, funky requests, some kind of error in there, or something special that will make the platform respond in a way that's unique to it. It's generally pretty easy to discover if a machine's either a Windows or a Unix platform. Then from there, there's a number of things you'll do, but you basically, one of the goals there is to identify the platform. Then you find out what services it has running, what ports are open. Okay, so you'll run a scan across all the ports, and it's a very simple process. Okay, you know, in code wise, it's a very simple thing. A port scanner is fairly low tech as far as this stuff goes. I know it's, you know, there's a lot of black magic involved, it seems, but really it's fairly straightforward. So you just go to each port and you try to connect to it. Find out what's on there. If anything responds, then you catalog this. Okay? Now if it's a service like a port 80, which would be a web server, you will try to identify what web server is it. What web server we're dealing with here. Are we dealing with an Internet Information Server, an Apache server? Could even be a Netscape server. Some of those are still running. AOL servers, whatever. You try to identify it. A lot of times, that information is given to you through the banners. But you never really want to trust the banners, because sometimes people will put a different banner than what web server they actually have to throw people off. Because depending on the type of web server, then you're going to have a different set of attacks you're going to perform. So there is a lot of ways to do web server fingerprinting. And there's plenty of discussion on that. If you're really interested in the nitty-gritties, go look on the web. HTTP print by NetSquare is probably the best tool I'm aware of. It's we've dealt with those guys. We have a lot of relationships with those guys at NetSquare, and HTTP print is amazing. HTTP print, I think that's the name of it. If not, oh well. NetSquare, you'll be able to find it. So you'll do that. And then you also want to do that for all the other services. So, you know, if it's got a mail server running, you try to identify what mail server it is. You know, you'll make requests. You'll actually try to do a couple, let's say it's a POP3 service. You'll do your POP3 commands. You'll try to discover, you know, each POP3 server is going to behave a little different. A lot of times they'll give a banner, they'll tell you exactly what they are. So what basically is happening here is you're going through and you have this big database of all of the potential platforms and all the potential services and their versions. Then from there you have a matrix of attack points, attack vectors. And you know, there may be thousands or tens of thousands, but it's still fairly finite. It's still, you know, it's a containable amount of things there that you're dealing with. You'll have this known vuln database, and this basically is just a huge list of all the issues with a given platform and with all the services that could be running on it. You know, does Microsoft Exchange Server, is that's running? Okay, well, there's these attacks that work against it. Is it, you know, is it a Windows platform? Well, these attacks, try these attacks, see if they're going to work against it. So you have a big database, you have a list of all the things that are vulnerable, so you go, okay, I'm running a Windows machine, it's running Internet Information Server and Exchange Server and SQL Server, and you take this information, you go to your database of all of the various attacks, you say, okay, what attacks can I run against a Windows machine? And you get that list. Then you go, okay, now against a Internet Information Server, okay, well, of this version or less, or this version or greater. And you just basically go through your list of all the attacks that are possible. And then you run them. You see if they worked. If they did, you've got a vulnerability. So that's the gist of it. You're just going through, you've got your big list of your database of all of the known problems, and then you test them. Now this is the key to it, is it's a known vuln scenario. You're not going against the machine and just creating random attacks. That's going to be usually pointless. What you're doing is people have already identified problems. They post them on lists. They go to BugTrack and they post them on there. They document what it is they do. Sometimes they'll even put a little script together to proof of concept it. But you're basically just checking all the things that people have already discovered. So, you know, all of the interesting research is on discovering these things and then posting them. And you get your credit for doing so. You get your kudos. If you're the guy that finds a vulnerability on a major service or a major platform, and it gets posted. So the job of network security is keeping up with all of the known vulnerabilities, is really what it comes down to. And then making sure that you're patched and that you're configured in a way that is secure. You lock down your systems. You know, you have your scripts, your lockdown scripts generally. You go through, you lock down your systems. On all the services that you're running, you're constantly having to be vigilant. You have to constantly be up checking for new patches, watching BugTrack, making sure that there's, you know, zero-day exploits, which is, you know, something that there's not even a patch for generally. You got to keep on top of that. If there's any of those things, you may have to take action yourself if it's serious. If it's not, and you can somehow limit your exposure, great. Otherwise, you sit there on the edge of your seat waiting for a patch to come out. And, you know, I don't want to get into the discussion of what's more secure, you know, Windows or Linux or OpenBSD or whatever the case. But whatever platform you're using, there are plenty of ways to secure it. And you just kind of have to be constantly vigilant. And you're always playing catch-up to the bad guys. It's very frustrating, but at least it's a finite issue. So I was involved with that, and I liked it. It's an extreme challenge. There's a lot going on. It's fairly interesting stuff, you know, but you get to a point where once you've got a handle on all of the known issues, in terms of building a product anyway, then really, it's just a matter of database maintenance. You have to have people that are constantly watching for all the latest stuff and building scripts to do these tests, you know, and basically building up our known vuln database. So, you know, the rest is, you know, you got enterprise issues, so you're dealing with trying to handle very large networks and distributing scans, and those kind of things are technically challenging and interesting, but they're not interesting in the security respect. They're interesting in the engineering and application respect. So it was still interesting for me. It was good work. But for NT objectives, there was a much more interesting challenge. That of trying to build a tool and trying to understand web application security. Now, the issue with web application security is that you're not dealing with known vulnerabilities. You're not dealing with, you don't really have a database. You do, but not really. You don't really have a database of known vulnerabilities. Because unlike the network security world, where you have, you know, a set number of platforms. You've got Windows, you got Linux, you got the BSDs, you got, you know, the Mac platforms, the OS X platforms. You know, you have a couple mainframe platforms out there that you may interface with. In the web, and you know, people don't build their own operating systems. At least not ones that are going to go online. People have custom operating systems, but usually it's around embedded devices. It's very rare that somebody's going to build their own operating system to run some internet service or any kind of web service. It's just not likely. So, you know, you have that finite set in network space. But in web application space, basically every application is custom. Every application out there, you go on every website you go to, basically it's custom. Now there's a few canned packages out there. You know, on the MightySeq site, we use WordPress. So that's a common thing. And you can have known vulnerabilities for those kind of packages. But in the greater scheme of things, that's pretty rare. There's, you know, there's only so many sites that are using WordPress. There's only, you know, of any given application, there's only so many sites. I was the father of PHP Groupware. In its peak, we had tons of users and a number of developers. I think we had like up 35, 40 developers at one given point. Tons of users. It's very popular in terms of web application, but even so, in terms of the percentage of internet sites and internet applications, it was infinitely small. It was tiny. You know, WordPress, whatever user base it has, its percentage of the web application number out there, whatever that number is, it's got to be in billions. Well, I guess not billions, but a huge number, millions. It's got a very small market share. So the real basic issue here is that web applications are custom. Even WordPress installs, so many of them are customized to such a large degree that web applications are custom. I mean, there's not really any arguing that. So because of that, you can't really have a known vuln database that really works. You know, there may be some security issues with WordPress. So you could try to identify that a website is running WordPress. That wouldn't be hard to do. There's a number of standard files out there, you know, in the collection. You can just do a quick search for them. And if they're there, you know you've got a WordPress install and you know that some vulnerability may work. And you can go down the list of any popular web application and you can do that kind of thing. But since generally you're dealing with a completely custom application, something developed by the company that's running it or the organization that's running it, or, you know, somebody they hire, the security issues are entirely different and entirely more interesting to me, at least. Because now you're having to figure out, how do I expose vulnerabilities in something I don't know how to deal with, or how nobody else has found the issues. So you're really blazing the trail when you're dealing with web application security. You're the one finding the new and interesting stuff. Now, there are a number of common attacks. So, you know, on a given input, so an input would be a get, post, or cookie input. So, you know, the get parameter is what we're most familiar with as web users. The get parameter is the thing you see on a URL. So you'll have www.somesite.com/somepage.php $variable name equals value and variable name equals value. Those, the variable name equals value on the URL is a get parameter. Then we have post, and that's around usually a form. So if you're submitting any kind of form, you know, you're typing your name and address into a form, it's usually being submitted via post. So you're not seeing the values on the URL. Initially, that was thought to be more secure, and to some degree it is. You know, if you've got somebody sitting over your shoulder, they really can't see what, I guess, the submission string is. And I don't know, it may add some very minor security benefit, but it's negligible. Then you have cookies. And, you know, we're all pretty familiar with cookies. The site is usually the one storing the value in the cookie. And sometimes people think that's a good place to save things. Now, and often people don't validate their cookie inputs very often. Because what they do is they're going to set a cookie. So they'll, like, give you a session cookie, and they'll give you a session ID number. And then they'll take that session ID number and check it against a database. Now, what they're not usually prepared for is the fact that you can modify that cookie value so that when it gets sent, it has a modified value. Maybe it has a SQL injection attack. Now, I'm not going to go into each of these different attacks into any real degree. I have separate podcasts for each of those. There's a SQL injection podcast that actually has a guest lecturer, Mike Shima. And if you want to dig into SQL injection, you know, go listen to that podcast. It's on the site. It's in the podcast feed. So, you know, for every input, you'll run the SQL injection attacks. Then you'll take and you'll run cross-site scripting attacks. Again, I got a podcast on that. Then you may mess with the input. So let's say you see a field that's asking for a zip code. No, no, let's say it's a field asking for a state. Now that's probably expecting a 2-character set of letters, right? CA, AZ, whatever, it's got a list. Now, are they validating that? Are they only in their SQL database? Is it defined as only having space for 2 characters? So what do you do when you send it with more than 2 characters? And a lot of times they won't check the inputs because it's in a form. And it's done over post, and it's not something that's easy for a user to mess with, especially if they add a drop-down list. So, you know, an attacker is going to take something like Peros and launch their attacks. They're going to launch the attack, have Peros running in trap mode, and then they're going to modify the data being sent. So that's part of either the attacking phase. So everything basically is custom. Everything, to some degree, takes some degree of human intelligence. You throw JavaScript into the mix, browser detection into the mix. If you're going to try to build a tool like our NTO Spider tool, you've got to deal with behaving like a browser so that the site will function. But then you also have to be able to do custom attacks that a browser wouldn't do. And that becomes really interesting. And that's what really makes web application security much different than network security. You don't have a real database of known vulnerabilities. What you have is a set of attacks or type of attacks. And then you try to apply them customly, you know, in a custom way to everything on the site. You're looking at all of the input points, the get, post, and cookies, and you're messing with them. You do have some known vulns, but you really, it's just you're dealing with the methods. And then the problem with that is, how do you do this intelligently so that you're not spending your lifetime running attacks? Because a given website could have, you know, a huge number of inputs. You know, you go to something like Yahoo, and every page is linking the stuff. There's get parameters. Oh, man, there's tons of get parameters. There's different domains. How do you make sure that you're, you know, within still the same domain? If you're a human, that's a little easier. If you're a automated scanner, how do you make sure that you don't go out of the owner's space? You know, you don't want to be attacking one of their sites they link to. So building a tool is much more interesting. The challenge is far greater to emulate a browser. You know, a network scanner really doesn't have to emulate a tool. I mean, it's just running port scans. It's using common TCP/IP layers, and you know, it's pretty low level and it's not a big deal. But application scanning and application testing is extremely interesting and extremely difficult. But there are plenty of tools out there for doing this manually. Peros is a proxy server. So I think peros.org, P-A-R-O-S, proxy.org or something like that. And that's basically a local proxy server and allows you to run what's called trap mode, where you can see the attack. You can see your request or and also your response before it goes over the network or before it comes back to your browser. And you can really automate, you can manually attack things. But you know, the manual attacks take forever. So, I don't know. I'm not sure if I entirely explained the difference between network security and application security. But the bottom line is, network security really has a finite space. There's a finite amount of things to attack. You basically rely on a massive database of known issues and scripts to test for them. In web applications, you're looking at a custom application every time, having to try to deal with its requirements and what it's doing, and attacking everything custom to that application. And in a way that you don't either destroy your session, if you're already logged in, you don't want to keep getting logged out. And if it is logged in, you know, you got to maintain your session. You know, if you've got a multi-threaded scanner, it's crazy. I'm trying not to make this about an automated tool, but there's just a lot that goes into web application security testing. And in terms of securing against it, as I said many, many times, in network security, you're relying on vendor patches. In web application security, if you're the one trying to fix the problem, you're dealing with custom problems. So your solutions have to be done by you. There's not generally going to be a patch to protect you against something. I guess, you know, one of these podcasts here, I'm going to have to start talking about security tools like web application firewalls, and where in large part they fail to resolve the problem. They are a step in the right direction. They're definitely useful tools, but they're not. A web application firewall is not nearly as effective in securing web applications as a standard network firewall is effective at securing against network vulnerabilities. And even, I mean, that's, I guess that's saying something, because standard firewalls are really not that great at securing network services, but they're better than nothing. And there's plenty of other things that people try to do, like intrusion detection, and they're doing the same thing in web application space, but so far, nobody's really gotten an effective solution. So web application security issues remain to be quite an interesting issue, at least for me. I don't know if this ramble's helped anyone, but I hope it has, and that's it for MightySeek.
Listening for his